This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
Osage County, Oklahoma is getting a lot of attention right now. It's the setting of Martin Scorsese's latest film, Killers of the Flower Moon. The movie is based on a book about the 1920s Osage murders, when white men poured into Osage County and killed Osage people for their oil wealth. I'm Rachel Adams Hurd, the host of In Trust, a podcast from Bloomberg and iHeartMedia. For over a year, I was reporting a different story about other ways white people got Osage land and wealth, and how a prominent ranching family in Osage County became one of the biggest landowners here. Their ranching empire was built on land that at the turn of the century was all owned by the Osage Nation. So how'd they get it? Listen to the award-winning podcast, In Trust, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Tim Stenovec on Bloomberg Radio.
Hey, for a few years before the pandemic, it looked at least to a lot of people that Chinese tech companies were pretty much unstoppable. You remember this, Carol, right?
I certainly do.
Okay, so back in 2017, for example, Tencent shot past what was then Facebook to become the fifth largest publicly held company. In 2020, China was second to the U.S. in terms of the number of unicorns, those, you know, private companies worth $1 billion. Of the world's top 10 unicorns in 2020, six of them came from China. Four Chinese companies topped the chart. All of this that I just read, coming from the introduction to the new book, High Wire, How China Regulates Big Tech and Governs Its Economy, the book by Angela Zhang, a professor of law at the University of Hong Kong. Professor Zhang joins us now from Washington, D.C. Professor, good to have you with us this afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hi, Carol and Tim.
Hi.
Hi. This is a great topic because we talk about it a lot and just about investing in China and whether or not it is indeed investable right now. But I want to back up a little bit. How did we get to the point where Chinese tech companies, both public and private, seemed unstoppable? And then suddenly, in the midst of the pandemic, there was this crackdown. What happened?
Well, I see the watershed moment was Ant Group's IPO suspension. And a couple of weeks before a couple of weeks before the suspension, Jack Ma made this highly controversial speech in the financial summit in Shanghai, as you may recall, and that really spooked the financial regulators, who eventually waged a regulatory war against Ant, and which caused the collapse of its IPO and also marked the beginning of an unprecedented crackdown that spread like wildfire, affecting every sector of China's internet industry.
Can you talk about competing forces for motivations here? Because it would seem to be in the best interest of leadership of a country to have a thriving economic, to have a thriving tech sector, and to have a thriving economy here. What happened?
Well, of course, right, for a really long time, that was the main policy agenda of the Chinese Communist Party. And they introduced this Internet Plus initiative and have been very supportive of the development of the consumer tech businesses. And back then, we have this very vibrant entrepreneurial environment. But what happened is that starting in 2020, when Ant was preparing for IPO, I mean, this firm trying to identify itself not as a fintech business, but rather as a tech firm. So it even changed its name from Ant Financial to Ant Group to avoid being identified as a financial institution so that it can gain a much higher valuation. And in fact, four times as much valuation as we have got, it would have gotten as a financial institution. Mm-hmm. And that really worries China's financial regulator, particularly the People's Bank of China, the PBOC. And particularly, Ant got a really, really high valuation in the end. It was 320 billion US dollars, and that's even higher than JP Morgan, the then largest bank at that time. Well, I mean, so that really worried the regulator.
You know, Professor Zhang, one thing I wonder is how, you know, your book is about how China regulates big technology. And I do wonder, in a time where I look at US-China relations are very strained, especially when it comes to, it feels like, technology and company know-how between the two nations. Having said that, what you are seeing in terms of the regulatory environment for China or what China has for its big tech companies, will that ultimately hold them back and stymie them? And maybe I don't know, does the U.S. not have to be so concerned about where China is going, especially when it comes to high tech?
You're right. I mean, in the aftermath of the crackdown, we see that, the tech sector has suffered a lot, right? I mean, the loss over $1 trillion of market cap during the crackdown. And a lot of these tech firms are laying off, conducting massive layoff. They would not be as competitive as they would have been were it not be a massive crackdown. However, I mean, I still think that these companies are fiercely competitive. As you can see, Biden was able to foster, a really successful company like TikTok, right? I mean, in the first place. So I still think that these are, serious rivals to U.S. Consumer tech businesses. But you are definitely right that what the government did had undermined its power.
Well, yeah. It's interesting too, on a day where we talked to our Mark Gurman about how, was it 1 in 7 iPhones, the lower end iPhones are now being made in India, and how Apple is diversifying, where it's making items. And I understand that China wants to be playing, certainly from a technology bent, on a higher level, if you will, right? They don't want to be the manufacturer to the world. But as they start to see some of those coveted global technology companies maybe look to diversify, does that have China concerned? Should they be concerned? And is it a result of all the policy?
Well, I think that diversification has less to do with the domestic regulatory policy, but more to do with the deteriorated geopolitical environment. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the very intense regulatory crackdown wasn't helping Chinese tech firms and hurt their competitiveness. U.S. firms do what they need to do to diversify their portfolio, and especially if not just U.S. large tech businesses, but also U.S. investors who used to be the major investors in Chinese consumer tech businesses, and now they are retreating from the Chinese tech sectors, partly also because they really don't like the regulatory regime. They think that it's too arbitrary.
Okay, so I want to give, you mentioned ByteDance, TikTok. I do want to get your prediction for what's going to happen here in the U.S. when it comes to the fate of TikTok. It's certainly not the focus of your book, but it's definitely something that I'm interested in your opinion on. I mean, what do you think happens here?
Well, I mean, I think the book is still relevant to the TikTok story because, TikTok is owned by ByteDance, a Chinese company, despite the fact that TikTok says we are not a Chinese company, but it has this Chinese link, right? I mean, so how China regulates ByteDance will have implications for TikTok's businesses, just like when the U.S. introduced this bill, says, TikTok, you can either divest yourself or, disappear from the U.S. market. And China says, well, we may not want you to sell, said to ByteDance, we may not want you to sell your critical technology to U.S. buyers, right? I mean, that was back in 2020 when the Trump administration wanted TikTok to divest itself to Oracle or sell it to other businesses, right? I mean, China introduces export restrictions that will potentially block such sales. Now, that being said, I don't think the Chinese government is hurting TikTok's position here. The fact that Chinese government has this law and will be very likely to say, we are blocking the sales, then will strengthen TikTok's argument that this is effectively a ban, right? I mean, so when this case, even if this the Senate eventually approved this law. I mean, even if this become law, this could be challenged in court, and court is highly unlikely. I mean, I think court is very unlikely to rule in favor of a law that work effectively as a ban, because that violates the freedom of speech of affecting too many U.S. citizens. So actually, I think the Chinese actually helps TikTok's position if you look at it from this perspective.
One thing I want to do, we just have about 45 seconds left here, just quickly, Professor Zhang, President Xi is all about common prosperity, and that's how he justifies some of the regulatory crackdown, if you will, and oversight of big technology. Will it lead to a more prosperous or widespread prosperous economy for China, or not necessarily? And again, sorry, just about 30 seconds here.
Well, the Commons Prosperity Initiative was well-intentioned. However, I mean, the way it had been implemented had led to unintended consequences. I mean, the tech crackdown is one excellent example. It was supposed to empower all the platform participants, like users, buyers, merchants, to better negotiate with the platform. However, it didn't really achieve this goal. It hasn't really changed the competitive dynamics or enhanced consumer welfare.
Really, really interesting.
Yeah.
Hey, macro thinking. Check out the book. It's called High Wire, How China Regulates Big Tech and Governs Its Economy. Angela Zhang, a professor of law at the University of Hong Kong, joining us just now. Professor Zhang, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
This episode is brought to you by EY. How can EY teams help you create a better version of your company? We work with you to turn data into greater insights, invest to drive growth, and realize your strategic vision through thoughtful implementation. Visit ey.com/reimagine to learn more.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine, plus global business, finance, and tech news as it happens. Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Tim Stenebeck on Bloomberg Radio.
It is Bloomberg Business Week. I don't know if you saw this, Carol, but it seems like everybody's coming out with new chips these days.
I agree.
So Meta Platforms today
announced, like there's an AI race or new AI race is on or something.
So Meta announced this new homegrown chip. What it's going to do is to help power its AI services. Mm-hmm. The idea here is that it aims to decrease its reliance on semis from NVIDIA and other outside companies. And you know what? It comes just a day after Intel essentially did the same thing. They rolled out a new version of their AI chip, also aiming to challenge NVIDIA in one of the fastest growing parts of the semiconductor industry.
All right, needless to say, AI and the chips that power AI, they are so, so hot right now.
Is that a Zoolander reference? I think she just did a Zoolander reference.
Maybe.
Chips, so hot right now.
All right, one of our go-tos on chips is Dan Morgan. He's Senior Portfolio Manager at Synovus Trust Company, joining us right now from Atlanta. You actually write about the top players in the red-hot AI chip market. It does feel like there's a lot going on, Dan Morgan. What are you paying attention to, whether it's Meta, whether it's Intel, or what NVIDIA is up to?
Well, it's interesting, Carol, because, you know, we kind of started off this conversation with who are the top traditional chip makers who are coming out with AI, AI products to compete against NVIDIA. So we had conversations about, let's say, AMD or Broadcom or Marvel, and to a certain extent, Qualcomm on the handset. And now that everything's kind of turned around, Tim and Carol, where we have the end user buyer of the chip is actually producing their own chips. Like you mentioned, the recent announcements that came out over the last couple of days. I mean, you've got Alphabet with the Axion chip. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tim.
I just wanted to, is it that easy that Meta can just create a chip that competes with NVIDIA?
Well, it's kind of interesting. Meta's chip, the MTIA is what it's abbreviated as, which is Meta Training Inference Accelerator version 1, which is kind of a long name. But to say, Tim, that that chip could go head to head against, let's say, a Blackwell 100, which is the new NVIDIA chip that came out a couple of weeks ago. I'm sure you guys covered that.
Oh, yeah.
Probably not be an accurate statement. But for the purpose of Meta, in regards to what they're trying to do, obviously, which is trying to post advertising when you're doing your social media searches and so forth in the right places to increase ROI, it might work very well for them. So it is interesting, though, Tim, that we're getting all these companies that are the end users who are now producing their own proprietary chips.
So is that a no? That it's not like NVIDIA's
chips? Yeah, I mean, the lecture wouldn't hold a candle to Blackwell.
So, well, here's the deal, right? Yeah. Not all chips are the same. We know that. We've talked to you. We talked to our Ian King. You know, I'm assuming that different companies are putting out things to make accelerator chips, to make the make the AI applications happen more efficiently, use less energy, and so on and so forth. So how are you looking at the AI chip space? Like, what's important? What does our audience kind of need to know here as all this news continues to come at them?
We bring up a good point, Carol, and that is that up to this point, most of the action has been in data center, right? And Tim and Carol, we have covered NVIDIA for many, many years and talked about their, you know, trajectory through that space. And now you have other companies who are trying to focus on the data center, right? AMD, Intel, trying to come out with chips to go against NVIDIA. And then you have the top players in that space, which would be Amazon with AWS. They just came out with a couple of new chips, the Graviton 4, the Trainium 2. Then we also have, believe it or not, Microsoft, which is the head of operating systems, has come out with their own chips also in that space for Azure. So it's interesting, Carol, because you have the proprietary companies developing chips specific to, for example, Amazon for AWS, and you have, let's say, Microsoft with Azure, but they are still focused in the data center. And that still seems to be the hot spot in terms of profits and so forth, and where a lot of the action is right now. Not to take away from, for example, what Meta or maybe Alphabet is doing. But so far, the hot spot for investors has been definitely in the data center.
Hey, Dan, what would you say to someone? I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about investment opportunities, because you watch the space really closely. What would you say to somebody who said, oh, you know what? I missed out on NVIDIA's 240% run up last year. I missed out on some of the 75% increase this year. Meta Platforms 200% increase last year, or Meta Platforms, you know, close to 50% increase so far this year. And they're thinking to themselves, wait a second, I feel like a lot of the gains to be had with AI have already been had. What would you say to that?
You know, I would say, Tim, we're still in the beginning stages. I mean, you could add Broadcom to that list of huge winners, right, in terms of investment over the last year. But, you know, I think that it's, you know, some people have said it's overhyped. It's kind of like what happened back in the summer of 2000. And I would totally disagree, just because these companies are all very profitable. They have very solid products. I still think there's a huge amount of upward potential, you know, in a lot of these names that we're talking about today. I mean, the projected growth rate for artificial intelligent chips is about 25% going out. So definitely one of the fastest growing groups. And I still think we're in the beginning stages, Tim and Carol. And I know that sounds a little crazy after these huge run-ups, but this is where the action is right now in tech, and I still believe it to continue to go.
Can I ask you, I mean, there are chips in everything, right? How many times have we said this? If we all had a buck for every time we said that, we would all be living on our private islands.
You could almost afford some
NVIDIA chips or stock, right, exactly. Yeah. No, but having said that, there are chips in everything. So not all chips are alike. You know, how much of our world currently today is an AI-related chip of some sort? How much will be?
Well, it's interesting, Carol, because, you know, we've talked before about Micron Technology being more of a commodity-based chip maker with DRAM and NAND, and then we swing the pendulum over to AI, right? As being
right.
Like NVIDIA, as being like, wow, they charge $20,000 to $30,000 a chip, where even a high-level Micron high bandwidth memory chip would probably be $1,000 to $1,500, just give you difference in the pricing. So, you know, I wouldn't say at this point, Carol, that everything has an AI chip in it. It's mostly, like we mentioned, the data center, but it is moving to other applications. But again, it's a sector that is still in its infancy stages in terms of, like you just mentioned, is it going to end up that we have an AI chip in our washing machines that we do our laundry in? I wouldn't be surprised if we don't, and we're getting there.
I can't even connect my washing machine to the internet.
But no, but that's your point. Like, is there a way that it, right? Like, I don't know. Do you anticipate, someone who understands this industry, that there will be an AI chip in everything? Is that where we're going?
I don't know if you could say, but pretty close, especially in terms of the, you know, you look at the driverless vehicles, that's a huge AI option, you know, opening for them. You look at mobile phones. I mean, Apple hasn't done that much in that space. We have Qualcomm has a chip that they have introduced in terms of the AI 100, but that's a huge open frontier, right? Getting away from the data center, getting away from cloud. So there are a lot of opportunities in other spaces, and maybe you're right, Carol, we'll get to the point where everything has an AI chip in it. We're not there yet, and that's what creates the growth.
I wasn't actually joking about not being able to connect my washing machine to the internet. We
haven't. Don't you think that's crazy? I have a toothbrush that I can do, like, connect to an app. I'm like, I just need to brush my teeth.
No, our washing machine is supposed to connect to the internet. It just won't work.
But why do you want that? So that you can
program it? No, I was trying
it?
To download. I downloaded the app. It won't connect.
There's the data on, like,
to see,
all right, the Stenovic household, when they're doing their laundry, what
it's
kind of suds they use.
I have, like, no idea. Hey, Dan, before we let you go,
I don't get it.
Give me some, give us some, give our investing audience some picks for the remainder of the year in terms of stocks you like.
Do you have a favorite name in this space?
Well, I mean, tech, it's hard not to like, you know, an NVIDIA. I mean, these are names that are currently on our buy list. Broadcom is another AI play. Qualcomm is interesting. Just as I mentioned before, is a play on the actual CDMA-based phones, of course, Android-based opposed to Apple. So those would be some kind of some names in the space, you know, that are currently on our buy list. That if, you know, the client's risk tolerance and objectives are in line, that would be something that we look at. In terms of AI. So those, again, are names that aren't uncommon. I'm sure a lot of people have already looked at those, but, you know, there's not that many ways to play it right now. And those are probably the top plays.
Hey, 20 seconds. Are you buying Microsoft, Alphabet, or Meta because of its chips? Real quickly.
You know, Microsoft looks really good coming into this upcoming report in about 2 weeks, Carol, and so does Meta in terms of ability to blow numbers. So even beyond the Gen AI focus, which we'll hear about on the conference call, I think there's other things that are working really strong for those companies. Yeah.
Dan Morgan, great report. Great to chat with you. Dan Morgan of Synovus. Thanks.
Join us in Chicago or virtually on May 2nd for Bloomberg's Business Value of AI event and networking reception. This event will gather business and technology executives to share their experiences and provide insights into their strategies for deploying AI that achieves a desirable ROI. You'll also learn how companies have successfully implemented AI solutions that have improved productivity and profitability. This program is proudly sponsored by IBM. Register at BloombergLive.com/AI/radio.